Little Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I believe, there with Our House to get us going as we talk about your house and maybe my house as well in the real estate market. With our old friend Kevin Trost, been with us many times, founding attorney of Trost LLC, has over 20 years of experience representing individuals. He represents financial institutions, businesses, and insurers, basically throughout the state and federal court systems. He has extensive experience handling disputes arising from, from residential real estate transactions. And so we're talking about buying or selling a home and wondering what questions you might have, maybe about the market, or maybe you're wondering about the legal process of buying or selling. Want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Kevin Trost, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to be back with you.
So let's look at the home prices over the last, say, 5 years. Give us a little bit of an overall of how we got here, where we are.
Certainly. Now, I think about 5 or maybe a little bit more years ago, we started seeing a dramatic rise in the prices of homes.
Yeah.
And that's generally continued, although I think we've seen kind of a plateauing over the last year or couple years, especially as the interest rates have
gone up
over time. And so I think currently we're kind of at a plateau area where in Wisconsin as a state, you're looking at an average home price in the $320,000 area. Now that's going to vary depending upon what area of the state you're in. Some areas might be higher, some areas might be lower, but just in general,
that's the median price.
Right.
And what about inventory levels across the state, do you know?
And Indian 40 levels continue to be on the tight side. And I think a lot of that is tied to not only kind of lack of new construction, but also the fact that people who are in their home currently that might be on the verge of deciding that they want to move out of their house are kind of having second thoughts of doing that because they look at the interest rates.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people had refinanced a few years ago when they could get an interest rate of 3% or 4%. And they realized, if I'm going to sell my house, I'm going to have to move somewhere and therefore have a new mortgage. And they look at what the current mortgage rates are and they say, well, I think I'll hold off and I'll stay where I am right now. So you see, in the end, you see not as much of the existing home inventory coming onto the market.
Which may keep the price up a bit.
I think it does.
For the homes that are for sale. And the Federal Reserve, of course, earlier this month, I think it was, lowered the rates. What they consider when they decided to lower the rates?
I think, well, the Federal Reserve, you know, being a national, looking at everything nationally, they are looking at obviously more than just the real estate market. They're looking at interest rates in general and the fluctuations in the economy and a more, macro type of view. With regard to real estate, I think what you're going to see is the interest rates that are offered for mortgages will continue to back off as the Federal Reserve's interest rate comes down. And even without the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates, you've seen that over the last year. About a year ago, you'd see interest rates typically over 7%, even the mid-7 percentage. And now, just on its own, even before the Federal Reserve took action, you can get a mortgage that the interest rate is in the low sixes.
And that makes a big difference, but it's still not 3. And you think it'll ever be that low again?
Hard to say. Hard to say what's going to happen in the future. Because 20, 30 years ago, if you told somebody that at one point in the future, you're going to see interest rates of 3%, they would have thought you're crazy. So never say never, but I don't think anybody's really predicting that the interest rate on mortgages is going to go down to 4% anytime in the near term or even the midterm.
Okay, and so So around six, let's say, what do you think it's going to mean for the housing market? There's still people, you know, as you were talking about, there's still people that, well, I got to borrow. If I sell, then I got to borrow.
That's true. And it'll continue to be something that keeps people who are in existing homes from deciding to sell their homes. But the lower the interest rate goes, I think the more people there will be that will be willing to take the chance, not really take a chance, but decide to go for it and sell their house. You know, so if you get the interest rate down to 5%, more people might say, hey, I'll put my house on the market.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got an older population. I mean, basically, there are a lot of people that are going to have to be moving.
At some point in time, yes.
One way or another, they're going to have to be moving. And so maybe that'll make a difference. In your opinion, so do you think the prices are going to stay pretty high on homes?
I think at least for the near-term future, it looks like the prices are here to stay at their current levels. We'll see what happens, but
yeah,
at least it's plateaued. You know, we're not seeing the, you know, the huge increase in prices that you saw a few years ago.
So you focus on a lot on residential real estate transactions. What kinds of legal frameworks exist around the real estate market?
Sure. A lot of my legal practice focuses on home sales gone awry, which largely involves people who have purchased a house and or have sold a house. And then there are a change in expectations. People who expect going into a house that they bought something and they knew what the maybe some of the imperfections of the house were, and then they discover something completely different within a month or so of moving into the house. And they start to wonder, well, did the people who sold me this house know about this problem and fail to disclose it? And so a lot of this focus goes back to the real estate condition report, which is a report set out in Wisconsin law that residential sellers of real estate have to complete when they're selling their house. And it's a list of, it varies over time because they change the questions, but it's a series of questions, usually about 50 or 60, asking people, are you aware of defects in X, such as are you aware of defects with the roof? Are you aware of defects in the plumbing? Are you aware of water intrusion problems or foundation problems? And the folks who are selling the house have to go through and check yes or check no, or there's also a box, NA, if it's a question that really isn't applicable to the house.
So when you're selling a house, you need to be pretty upfront about what you do know.
It helps a lot. It's very important to be truthful and upfront about what you know about the house that you're living in that you're trying to sell. And that just being upfront oftentimes will save you on the back end. If the people that are buying the house later learn of something wrong with the house, it can save you from legal problems down the road.
Does it pay to, there's probably two ways to look at this, is what you know, but if you want to sell a house, getting a registered home inspector in before you sell the house to, you know, do the inspection?
There are people that do that. And then they have the home inspection report sitting there on the table when people come through to view the house. I think that's a great idea for people to do.
Somebody else said, well, then then we have to tell everything. And I said, well, you have to tell everything anyway. But he said, but not if I didn't know it to begin with.
And that's true. That's one of the caveats on the real estate condition report. You have to disclose what the defects that you're aware of. If it's a problem you aren't aware of, there's no way you can possibly disclose that.
Yeah. But if the home inspector finds a problem that you're not aware of, you have to report that. But it also then may save the somebody calling you and saying, this person didn't tell me about this thing.
That's absolutely true. And that happens every once in a while.
What are the most common undisclosed defects?
The most common ones involve water.
No.
Whether it's water in the basement from a foundation crack or maybe an improper grade that, you know, causes water to flow through the backyard and go into the basement over the foundation wall, or water through the roof because there's a leaky roof. But generally, it involves water.
Not a good thing. And water, you do not want to be sitting in your living room and during a rainstorm and water is hitting you on the head.
Absolutely true. Definitely want to avoid that situation.
Builder really would set a buyer off.
That is true. Builders go through lots of efforts when they're building the house to put protections in place so that water does not get on the inside of the house.
Kevin Trost, our guest today, founding attorney of Trost LLC, works out of Madison, have lots of experience handling disputes arising from residential real estate transactions. What's your experience been with buying or selling a home? What questions do you have for Kevin? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at buying and or selling a home on the show today with Kevin Trost, and it's great to have him back with us. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in with a call at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. And just to let you know, at noon today, professional home stagers make sure your house is stable and ready to hit the market. We get tips for getting your home ready to sell at noon today on the program. So it's great to have that as well. Somebody wonders, what happens if you fail to report a defect in your home, but only because you didn't know about it?
Well, that's the thing. With the real estate condition report, it only asks you to report defects that you're aware of. And so if it's a defect that you're truly not aware of, then you're answering truthfully when you're checking that no box on the real estate condition report that asks you, are you aware of a defect in X?
Yeah, yeah. Carrie in central Wisconsin will go to you. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. My daughter and son-in-law bought their first home about 3 years ago and decided, because they had a home office in their basement, to test for radon, and it came up extremely high. It was a home that was built, it was probably like 20 years old when they bought it. Just wondering how that is to be reported. Is that something that it's in an area where there are a lot of homes with radon, and so they needed to remediate that. Just wondering how that gets handled after the sale of a home.
Well, the situation with a radon system, and that's fairly easy to mitigate. There's a pipe that gets put into the basement off in the sump pump area that takes the air and takes it outside the house, either a passive system or an active system that has a fan to help suck the air into it. In terms of whether that's something that should have been disclosed during the course of the sale, it really depends. It depends on if the people that your relatives bought the house from, whether they knew there was high radon or not. There's no requirement that a house be tested for radon as a part of a house sale or even a home inspection. Usually that's an add-on feature that the home inspector might offer for an additional fee. So there's no requirement that this home had ever been tested for radon in the past. But if it had, and the folks that were selling the house knew that there was a high radon level, I would think that at some point that should have been disclosed in the course of the sale. But once again, it depends on if the people actually knew that problem.
Yeah, if they hadn't tested and didn't know the problem. Although I will say, I mean, we're a radon state. I mean, there's so many parts of the state that have high radon levels.
That is true. That is true. It's good practice to just, as a standard practice, to test the home for radon.
Yeah.
And Larry, just before we go further, just so everybody knows, you know, we're not offering legal advice here today.
Yeah.
It's often not possible to
absolutely
legal and give people excellent legal advice over the phone based on just what's said during a call-in portion of a radio show. However, it is, you know, I'm offering the thoughts of a lawyer on the subjects. But I just wanted to make that nice legal lawyer disclaimer.
Okay. Carrie, there you go. Thank you. Scott in Windsor, we'll go to you. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I bought a home in Windsor back in 1996. And on the property condition report, it said mild seepage in basement. And I thought, well, okay, that's usual. The first time we had a heavy rain, it was flooded. The basement was just completely deluged. And we fixed the grade, and that solved the problem. But I've always been a bit haunted to know, what should I have done? And what recourse do you have when you find out that there's something that is qualitatively wrong on the condition report? What do you do?
Well, sure. And I think by the tone of your question, I think you understand that at this point in time, your legal remedies are
gone
long past, since this was a sale back in 1996. But if this was a sale, you know, today, if somebody puts on the real estate condition report that there's mild, you know, water that comes into the basement with some rains, that's really kind of alerts the potential purchaser that there might be an issue. Because especially when you use terms such as mild, one person's mild water intrusion is another person's torrential flood. And so when you see language like that on a real estate condition report, a good practice is to check that out as much as you can. Also, ask for further clarification.
Yeah. What do you mean by mild?
Absolutely.
And the home inspector might look at the basement condition and maybe look at if there are water lines a foot high along the basement wall.
Right. And that's something definitely to look for. Not only, you know, a home inspector, but also yourself when you're touring the basement. Just look for signs that there was significant water intrusion or water problems in the past, whether it's moisture stains or, you know, if portion of the basement is finished, if there's some evidence that the lower portion of the drywall looks like it had been water damaged at some point in the past.
Yeah. And so in Scott's case, maybe he could have asked at the time, what do you mean by mild? And
I think that would be a good practice.
Yeah. All right. Scott, there you go. Thank you. Diane in Darlington, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I have two questions. One of them is, using a lawyer adequate to handle all the legal issues in a closing with a sale for sale by owner?
Oh, a FSBO.
Yeah.
A lot of people do. Some people will go through a FSBO sale and handle everything themselves. Other people are more comfortable having a lawyer review the documents, sometimes prepare either the offer to purchase or, you know, a counteroffer or any amendments to the offer that may come up. And, you know, just from what I've seen in my practice, it can be very useful and helpful to avoid problems down the road. After all, a lot of times a real estate transaction, buying or selling a home, can be the biggest sale or biggest purchase that one goes through in life. And so a lot of times it can make sense to spend the extra money to make sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed on those transactions.
Yeah, I think that makes good sense. Diane, thank you for calling. James in Manawa, we'll go to you now. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
When I first purchased my house 6 years ago, first week there, bathroom upstairs, all the drains were all clogged up. And then I'm a very handy person. I had to go and tear everything apart, fix it all up, come to find out that the drains were plugged all the way downstairs, outside, underneath the ground, and three-quarters of the way to the street. So I had to take care of all of that. I dealt with it. 2 years ago, it rained pretty decent, and come to find out that there's two windows in the basement that were covered over by a porch on the outside and drywall on the inside, but they never were filled with anything. There wasn't a window there. There wasn't plywood. There wasn't anything. It was just an open hole.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a strange situation.
That is indeed. And that's something that should have been, you would have thought, would have been in the condition report.
You would think so. If there was a place in the, from what I'm hearing right, if there's a place in the foundation or two places in the foundation where there should have been windows and there just weren't, and for some reason not anything that anybody could readily see without doing some extensive investigation.
Yeah. In that case, it's possible the person that owned the house before James didn't know it either.
That's quite possible. It's quite possible. A lot of times that depends on how long somebody owns a house. You know, if you're buying a house from somebody who lived there for 2 or 3 years, quite possible that they were completely baffled, as unaware as you were for a number of years about this situation.
Wow, really? But if they lived there 30 years...
if they lived there 30 years, better chance that they would know it.
For sure.
Or if they were the ones that built the house.
Yeah, for sure. James, thank you for calling. There you go. Renee in Viroqua will go to you. Hi, Renee.
Good morning. Yes, I am wondering if I have a farm and I've negotiated a 5-acre sale, so it'd be going from a cropland to commercial. Is this something I can handle myself? Or should I get professional help?
So you're changing the zoning for the farm?
Well, I'm changing the zoning and I'm also selling that 5 acres off of a field.
Yeah.
Well, I think people are going to have different levels of comfort depending upon if they've done something like this before frequently in the past or not. I would say in that type of situation, you may want to consult an attorney unless this is something that you've regularly done in the past.
Yeah. Did you get the zoning changed already?
No, we haven't. But I did sell property in town, but then you've got everything listed and you just go to the title company and it was one unit together.
Yeah. Well, in your situation, you know, you kind of have a multi-step process there because you're going to have to change the zoning. And I found that a lot of people benefit from the help of a lawyer in getting the zoning changed, because there are times when your local municipality may not be as keen as you are on changing the zoning, especially if you're changing it, you know, from one type of zoning to another, such as to commercial.
Yeah, you may want to check with an attorney on this, because that's a big process. I'm just getting the zoning changed. You want to have somebody who really knows what they're doing on that, I would think.
That's true. I mean, often towns and municipalities will have have some type of plan for what they expect the land in their township to be, whether it's residential or agricultural or commercial. And they might not have any desire or plan for this area of land that you want to change to commercial to be actually commercial. So you might get some blowback on your request.
Yeah. Yes. There you go, Renee. Thank you for calling. Dennis in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Thing is, as far as mortgages, sometimes people need mortgages to settle estate problems, like when a property is available to all heirs. Somebody might need a mortgage to buy out the others, and I have a story if you wanted to hear how I handled it.
Well, it depends. Is it a short story, Dennis?
Oh, yeah, somewhat short. Okay, just my siblings had animosity between them, and they both disowned my parents, and they accused me of being my parents' favorite when I was given the estate executor and the power of attorney. Well, I figure, well, they're probably going to think this house is worth so much, so I figure, hey, I just offer them this. They could split it halfway and each get $5,000, and I will get $20,000 and be out of it.
Hmm.
Because I figure, well, they're not going to want to battle between each other as far as who's going to get what and who's going to pay off the other. And so I figured, hey, they're just going to give it up.
Okay.
You see that happen oftentimes when there's multiple siblings and there's family dynamics going on where, you know, one person or two people don't like the other, or there's, you know, animosity between kids and parents. It leads to estate problems down the road when it's time to transfer property.
Well, and it makes very good sense then for the property owners to have a will that clearly states how the division of property is going to be made.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. And best to have that will professionally prepared to make sure that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed, so that if the will gets submitted to probate court by, you know, one disenfranchised or angry relative, that the will hold up.
Yeah. Cheryl in Iron Ridge, thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, I just happen to be a real estate broker on my own in Wisconsin. I'm not with a big company, but I had a comment on the lady with the farm. First of all, if she wants to sell the 5 acres, I would think she has two choices: to sell it the way it is and let the buyer determine how they want to change the zoning and let them go through the expense of changing the zoning or inquire about changing the zoning. And if she wanted to incur the cost of it, then she could do it ahead of time so she could sell it as a commercial piece of property. But it all comes down to one thing: money.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't want to spend the money to do it, then I would let the buyer spend the money to do it.
But then it's harder to probably find a buyer, I would think.
Necessarily not. If all she really has to do is call zoning and say, can this be done and what is the procedure, she can offer that information to a prospective buyer, and the buyer can determine whether or not they want to do it. The perfect example is, can I turn my house into a duplex or not? Well, if it's a single-family residential lot, you can't turn it into a multifamily without going to zoning and doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That makes sense, Kevin?
That makes total sense. It's going to – a lot of that is going to depend upon how amenable the local municipality, the local zoning board, is to making those changes.
And some zoning boards are – pretty particular when it comes to ag land.
They can be.
Yeah, they can be very particular. So it all, and there's, how many would there be in this state of Wisconsin? Hundreds, hundreds and hundreds.
Many, yes.
Yeah, let's put it that way. Yeah, Cheryl, thanks a lot. Appreciate your input. You can join in too. The number to call, 800 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Jerry emailed us, by the way, and says, again, on the news this morning was a story about someone whose home was sold out from underneath them. How and why is this possible, and what can you do to prevent it?
Well, I haven't seen that story.
I haven't either.
Yeah, I don't know completely what he's referencing, but maybe he's talking about situation where, I'm not sure if it's somebody, a situation where they go and they record a different a deed with the Register of Deeds, and then based on that, having color of title, they try to sell the house. I think the Register of Deeds, from my experience, tends to be pretty attuned to watching out for those type of scams, at least around here.
Yeah, but that kind of makes sense. That may have been what happened in this case. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, how is there any way to prevent it? Well, if you've got the deed,
if you have the deed and you're the record title holder, then you know at least you have, you know, colorable title in order to try and sell the property. And I think, but like I said, I think the Register of Deeds offices are pretty attuned to fly-specking things that come in to make sure that they're not just unwillingly participating in this type of scam.
Yeah.
I think most Register of Deeds offices are used to seeing new deeds come in from title agencies during the course of sales. And so if they get a deed that comes in just from somebody off the street that wants to record a deed, they'll give it a second look.
Yeah. Brad in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Brad.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I had a question. I have a family trust established. Everything's in it except for our home. Am I able to go through a title company to do that, to have that filed properly at the courthouse?
To have the trust filed or have something associated with your real estate filed?
The house, I think you meant.
To have the house put into the trust.
Oh, to have the
right now it's in my spouse and my name at the current time. The trust has been set up for quite some time.
Well, I suspect a title agency would be willing to assist you, and if they weren't, they could probably direct you to probably a local real estate attorney who could assist with that. Probably a fairly simple process of deeding the property from people's individual names into the trust and then having that deed recorded.
I would think there may be some laws or some law relating to how long that process is, how many years or how many months or whatever that process needs to be in vogue or in practice, I guess I should say.
That's true. And I think speaking with somebody at a title agency or a local real estate attorney could probably give him the best way forward.
Brad, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kevin Trost, our guest today, founding attorney of Trost LLC. Lots of experience handling disputes arising from residential real estate transactions. Questions? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at buying or selling a home today on the show with Kevin Trost of Trost LLC of Madison. It's great to have him by today to talk about buying your home, a home, or selling your home. And you can join in at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. Mike in Fond du Lac has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I paid off our home in Fond du Lac after, gosh, a 30-year mortgage, I guess, in 2007. And, of course, there's been no further payments required. But I never did receive a title or deed from the mortgage lender. Should I go to a title search company or to the city, some department of in Fond du Lac in order to get my title?
I think that's probably be the easiest way for you to do it. More than likely what happened when you made that final payment with your mortgage company is the mortgage company filed a satisfaction of mortgage against your property, which, you know, is the official record showing that this mortgage that they had previously recorded many decades earlier, showing that you owed them money, had now been satisfied and was no longer something that was affecting the title to your property. So, yeah, you point out two very simple, straightforward ways of getting the satisfaction of mortgage, or at least making sure it's there. One is to go to the Register of Deeds and do some searching yourself to find it in the record. The other way is to ask either a real estate lawyer or a title agency to request a letter report on the title for your house. And that'll give you a listing of everything that's been recorded against your property with the Register of Deeds. And that, my experience, that costs about $50.
Oh, so pretty cheap insurance there, Mike. Go and do. Go and do. Thank you for calling. Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. We have a second home lake cabin up in the North Woods that we intend to pass down to our kids. And we're getting two opinions on how to pass that property along, whether as a trust or through a cabin LLC, and wondered, based on what you've seen and experienced, which of those is a better route typically for people?
Well, I think either route is fine. I know people that have done it either way. I think you're probably going to be best off talking with some type of trust and estates lawyer, somebody who deals with the process of passing along property to heirs, and they're going to have the most knowledge of the ins and outs of the best way to do it, especially in your situation, because usually the vehicle that people go with to do that is going to depend upon the individual facts of their family dynamics.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Bill, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Louis called, couldn't stay with us. There's recent federal legislation about real estate agents that affects their commissioning process. Kevin, are you familiar with this?
Yes, there was a large class action lawsuit that was settled, I believe, sometime in the spring. And that what that lawsuit concerned was the commissions that real estate agents charge. And the result of the lawsuit means that going forward, I believe it's starting here in the fall, the real estate agents have to be more upfront with disclosing the commission that they're being charged and that they're charging, and coming to an individual agreement with their client as to what they're going to get paid out of the transaction.
Okay, so the real estate agent has to say, well, I'm going to be charging you 6% on this $300,000 house, so that's my commission will be $18,000.
Exactly. And traditionally, it has always been that 6%, 3% to the seller's agent, 3% to the buyer's agent. And as a result of this lawsuit, I think that's the percentages that are being charged are more in flux. And so it's intended to be more of a negotiation, more of a discussion between a real estate agent and their client as to what's being charged and who's paying it.
And who's paying it? Yeah, for sure. Dan emailed us. Their home was built in 2021. They recently discovered a sill stone under a window is pitched toward the house instead of away from the house. This has allowed water to enter the house and caused mold. If the builder refuses to fix the issue, is there anything Dan can do on a legal standpoint?
I mean, it's possible. A lot of the statute of limitations on claims involving real estate are either around the 3-year time period or the 6-year time period. For example, a simple breach of contract claim is a 6-year statute of limitations. So, you said your house was built in 2021. So, depending upon when that was in 2021, you may or may not be past some of those 3-year statute of limitations. But I think the first thing you need to do is approach the builder and let them know of the problem and see if they're willing to make a fix or a correction and take care of this. A lot of them will. Some will say, hey, our warranty was 1 year, and there was a reason why we have a 1-year warranty, and you're outside that period, so too bad, so sad. But nevertheless, I think that's the first thing to do is approach the builder.
And it sounds like in this case the builder was approached and said no. Then what?
Well, at that point in time, it might be worth having the case evaluated by a real estate lawyer to see if there is a claim there that is worth being brought. Sometimes cases are worth being brought because the fix is going to cost a lot of money, and the terms of your contract for the construction of the house is favorable for bringing a claim, meaning it's something that the builder shouldn't have just dismissed you on, but should have taken care of. In other situations, there might be a problem, but it might be something that the fix is going to be just a few $1,000 fix and is just worth just doing the fix rather than going down a legal route.
Yeah, for sure. On this warranty business, if the builder says, well, I gave you a 1-year warranty, but there's a law that says they have up to 3 years, or is that warranty that you agreed to override the 3 years?
Well, that can depend. A lot of times that'll be a point of disagreement where the builder would say, we gave you a 1-year warranty, and that you're stuck with that. However, there are a number of situations where you're not going to have your ability to take legal recourse limited by it, simply that warranty that you actually have the full 6 years for a breach of contract.
Okay. Need to look into that for sure to make sure. Tim in Madison, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, yes. I was just wondering, Larry, if your guest could talk about, I've heard it's really common for, people up in age to put their property into a trust, I guess, to avoid taxes, for their children. Could you talk about what that's about and why that might be a benefit? And I'll hear on the air what you have to say.
Okay. So if you, what is the benefit? You put, a lot of people put their homes in a trust for the kids to avoid taxes on the kids' end.
That's true. A lot of them do. And that would be something that probably a tax attorney would have the most knowledge of and be able to advise on. Some people's accountants might have some informed opinions on that as well. But it is a very common practice to put a house in a trust and then, have the trust is made up so that upon somebody's passing, the trustee for the trust automatically turns over to the child or children.
Yeah. And if you look at the limits of before taxing of properties, it's a couple of $1 million, isn't it, or something?
Yes, the federal government's always changing the level over which an estate is taxed. And it, I think you're right, Larry, at this point in time, it's $2 or $3 million is the threshold before the taxes kick in.
Yeah, before they kick in. So, yeah. Tim, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Are there pros and cons, Kathleen wants to know, of offering to purchase, including a clause requiring binding arbitration unless otherwise deleted or omitted by the seller and buyer?
That's not something I typically see, but that is a clause you'll see in a lot of other types of contracts and a lot of other types of situations where if parties have a parties to the contract have a disagreement, the contract says you can't really just go to court and file a claim. Instead, the dispute resolution process is through arbitration, which is outside of the court process, where a private, usually an attorney, maybe a former judge, serves as the arbiter. Basically, they sit in place of the judge and make the decisions as to people's claims and arguments and to come up with a resolution to a situation.
So it may save some money?
It can save some money. The other benefit that people see to arbitration is there's nothing in the public record. In other words, in Wisconsin, you can go online and see, search all through the court cases in the state courts of Wisconsin and pull up any cases that involve a certain person or a certain company. And so if you have an arbitration clause, if somebody has a problem or a dispute, traditionally that could lead to a lawsuit filing, which would show up on the public record as, you know, X versus Y. But if you have an arbitration clause, then that goes to, a private arbiter to decide, and you don't have that showing up in the public record.
And so there'd be some people, that would be an advantage for some individuals, I would guess.
I would think so. Some people, or companies may not like to have, a lot of publicity out there or public availability of knowing that there have been 10, 20, 30 court cases filed involving them over the last 5 years.
Where can you find a reputable lawyer to help you out with real estate and legal issues?
Generally, if a lot of people ask around and get recommendations from friends. Absent that, the State Bar of Wisconsin, which is the kind of the governing body for lawyers in the state, if you look them up on the internet, there's called a lawyer referral hotline where there's a number you call and it's staffed by somebody from the state bar, and they will listen to your description of the problem, and they have a list of people who have signed up to be a part of the state lawyer hotline or the state bar referral service. And the folks at the state bar can give you the name and number of somebody in the area of expertise that you're describing that can potentially handle your problem.
Ah, interesting. And a good way to end. Kevin, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much. Kevin Trost, the founding attorney of Trost LLC in Madison, As you could hear, he has extensive experience handling these kinds of disputes regarding buying or selling a home. Coming up, if you're going to sell a home or you're thinking about it down the road, we'll be giving you some advice on getting it ready to sell. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.